Go. Okay, now I'm actually recording.
Yeah, me too.
It's actually got a time ticker on it. Life is good. All is well with
Good
the
job we
world.
hadn't said too much.
Well, yeah, thank God for that. Hello, and welcome to episode 13 of the Book Class Club. In this episode, Jenny and I talk about current and recent reads and the books we're most looking forward to in 2019. If you have any thoughts, questions or feedback, get in touch at bookcastclub on Twitter or email thebookcastclub@outlook.com. And don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on your podcast app. We hope you enjoy the episode. Book Class Club in 2019.
Hello
again. This is our second attempt at recording because first time I didn't press record. So I think that gives you an indication of how our year is going so far.
Yes. I can't remember what we said. I think we apologised for taking so long to record this episode.
Definitely.
But we had said there wouldn't be another one before Christmas. And in fairness, it's only the start of February, so maybe we're not too late.
And you've moved in that time.
I have moved in that time.
And you were without the internet for quite a while?
A couple of weeks.
Okay. And then it was my birthday, so that's always distracting. And yeah.
We're going to blame Ben, because actually we were going to record last week, but he has been fitting radiators in the house. He's been banned from, he's in the bedroom next door, so I've banned him from the room, because you can hear him doing everything. So, yes.
I could hear some kind of background noise.
Yeah,
then.
No, he's not in now, so she shouldn't be able to. But, yes, he was soaring last week.
Is there something on your microphone? Because I can hear, it sounds almost like a tapping on it.
No, there's nothing. There's nothing near my microphone.
Okay, that's fine. It's probably just my headphones or something then. So Ben has been banned from soaring and doing anything productive.
Tonight he has, yeah. So,
what a hardship for him.
Yes. I don't know what he's doing. I think he's out in the garage. Probably soaring, but at least he's doing it outside.
Outside, in the cold, in the rain.
Yes.
Not allowed in the house.
He was moaning because he didn't have a jumper to do DIY in because I made him get rid of everything when we moved.
Did you fully Marie Kondo?
Yeah, I did.
Shall we talk about... Do you want to tell me what you... Do you want to start with current or recent reads?
I'll do recent, even though one of them isn't very recent. So, okay. We started talking about this and then we realised your sound wasn't recording, so...
Well, so now you can tell me all over again.
I have been in a real, reading slump since before Christmas, so...
Wow.
I haven't really read anything. That's a lie. I read one book before Christmas, which was your book, which I'll talk about, and one book after Christmas, and... That's kind of it. And I haven't listened to... Well, actually, one of those was an audiobook. But I haven't had the urge to pick a book up. I haven't had the urge to listen to anything. And I think it's maybe just January blues. And all I've really wanted to do is kind of watch TV series and films. And yeah.
Marie Kondo.
Yes. Just binge watching Marie Kondo. Tidying up houses and blessing people's houses, so yeah, it's not been a good start to the year. However, I can feel things picking up again, so
that's
yeah
good.
It obviously is something to do with it being January and pretty miserable in the UK at the moment. I'm not normally one for being like, oh, it's winter, January blues. Like, I normally love the winter, but it's so wet and miserable that, and it's been like it for, apart from one nice day at the weekend, it feels like it's been like it for weeks and weeks and weeks. Just grey and wet.
Yeah, it's been okay. Do you know what? It's actually been okay in London because my office is on the 11th floor of a building that's not surrounded by any other tall buildings. So we've got the most amazing view of kind of the sky, weirdly enough. The sky is huge. We've got huge wind. I'm not in one of these fancy glass office blocks, just to reassure people. Trust me, I am not in a building like that. But are, we're like in the corner, so we've got loads and loads of windows, and it's, I feel like it's been really nice for a lot of the time up there, but generally speaking, like, there's things sort of on the horizon that I can spot, and I can tell if the weather's nice, and I feel like I've mostly been able to see them recently. But you're right, it's been cold, it's not been particularly, like, inspiring weather. Like, I am really, really looking forward to it being, I love the winter as well, like, genuinely really love the winter, but I'm actually properly looking forward to being able to sit outside with a book again.
Spring.
Like, I'm really looking forward to that, because at the moment, yeah, like, I don't want to just, like, or, like, just taking a book to the park near me, like, just anything, whereas at the moment, I just kind of want to go out and come back in and hide.
Yeah.
And I've got really into Scandal on Amazon Prime. How I missed this first time around, God knows, but it came out in, like, 2008 or something like that. And I've just got really into it, so I'm just watching that instead of reading or anything. So I'm totally with you on the reading something. I've been kind of struggling a bit as well, so
yeah, it's weird. I think a lot of people, I don't know, read more in the winter because it's kind of the months to, like, hunker down and get cozy, and
yeah.
I've had the opposite happen in which I just kind of just want to lie under a blanket and watch telly.
I just want to sleep a lot.
Yeah, it must be a winter thing.
So but what have you read then?
Before Christmas, basically I've read two true crime books. So Before Christmas, and this is the one that you lent me, I finished I'll Be Gone in the Dark by Michelle McNamara.
What did you think?
So I did really enjoy it at the time, and you know, I actually got through it quite quickly, and considering it's true crime, and sometimes true crime books can be a little bit heavy. This isn't that at all, and it probably helps that she isn't a police officer or a forensic investigator or a lawyer or anything like that. Like, she isn't just Joe Bloggs. I mean, you find out who her husband is and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, essentially she is just...
She's just a writer.
Yeah, just a writer. Could be you or I kind of becoming obsessed with a case and gathering loads of info on it and then writing something. Yeah, I enjoyed it. However, considering I read it, what, a month or two ago now, when I think back on it, I can't really remember it. And I think...
Really? I'm surprised at that, because I read it last summer... when I was on a holiday, so last June, and I remember it quite vividly.
I can remember bits of it, and obviously what he did, but I don't know whether... It doesn't help that she died before it was published, because I think it was a little bit... Not incoherent, that's not...
It's definitely unfinished.
Yeah, it's just not that polished... And I know that can't be helped. I mean, she died without finishing it. And her publisher or her editor has, like, pieced bits together from old articles she's written or old blog posts she's written.
I think her husband has actually had quite a big part.
Yeah, so I think it's her husband and her editor that kind of pulled bits of it together. So it was just a little bit incoherent in places. It jumps around... quite a lot. I did struggle with the timeline a little bit.
Yeah, I agree, actually. I remember the timeline being a bit odd because it jumps from location to location and time to time, and it is a little bit tricky to follow. And I think as well, because, I mean, she refers to him... Does she refer to him as the East Area Rapist, or does she refer to him as the original Night Stalker? I can't remember.
Or is she the one that...
The Golden State Killer is what she refers to. But this is the thing.
She penned that name, didn't she?
Yeah, she did. But there's all of these different names used for the guy. Because
they're like the... not counties.
No, but it is counties in the US.
Is it counties?
Well.
Like, yeah. Because they didn't speak to each other, did they? So, no. Like, they... they had different names for him. So yeah, it was a little bit hard to follow sometimes because it does jump around a lot, and it'll go from one chapter that she clearly wrote in its entirety to another one that's been pulled together from her notes to another one that's like a transcript of a conversation she had. So it is really good and it's fascinating, and I can't remember the details of it now. I don't tend to retain stuff that well either, but the final chapter where she basically... Oh, I might have to go get it and read the final like sentence out, but she says something, doesn't she, to him that... I think her final summary is that she believes that he's going to be caught because of improvements in DNA and these websites, these like ancestry websites where loads of people's details go on, and it'll... some DNA database somewhere will reveal who he is at some point. And I'm gonna go get the book because it's her last sentence. Hold on. So it's this last bit. So she says, one day soon you'll hear a car pull up to your curb, an engine cut out, you'll hear footsteps coming up your front walk like they did for Edward Wayne Edwards 29 years after he killed Timothy Hack and Kelly Drew in Sullivan, Wisconsin, like they did for Kenneth Lee Hicks 30 years after he killed Laurie Billingsley in Olaha, Oregon. The doorbell rings, no side gates left open, you're long past leaping over a fence. Take one of your hyper-gulping breaths, clench your teeth, inch timidly toward the insistent bell. This is how it ends for you. You'll be silent forever and I'll be gone in the dark. You threatened a victim once. Open the door, show us your face, walk into the light.
It is. It's amazing. It's so good.
And so that works really well because she obviously didn't get to finish it. And yeah, I think it's in that same summary. She talks about DNA and that's how he'll be caught in the end.
Yeah, and she was spot on. I don't think the guy's been convicted yet.
I think the trial is kind of probably imminent, I'd have thought.
They arrested somebody, I think it was last April or May, and that's exactly how they got him. I think some of that's talked about a little bit in the epilogue. Or they allude to stuff like that happening in the epilogue. They don't name the guy, I think, but they basically say, like, we're pretty sure we know who some of this guy's family members would be by now and all this kind of stuff. And, yeah, it's just mad.
I think that's what she's saying. So they didn't know when this got published, but I think in her, like, summary at the end, she's saying, like, pretty much that he's not going to be able to hide from DNA profiling for much longer, that in one of those sort of DNA databases some of his family members will be in there and he'll be caught, and that is what happened in the end.
Yeah, it's amazing. So yeah, I think it's brilliant. I think, like you say, it's so sad because it definitely could have done with her having just another few months even to work on it, like, and she just died in her sleep. Like,
I think she was on a lot of prescription medication, so I think that's what she died of.
That's really sad.
Yeah, so she was on a lot of different medication, I think. Mm. So I think it wasn't quite as simple as her just dying in her sleep, but
fair enough.
Yeah, she was only in her 40s, so it's very sad.
Super young.
Yeah.
But, so what would you give it out of 5, then, if you're having to rate it?
So, I can see that I rated it 4 out of 5 on Goodreads.
That's quite high for you.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. It's only kind of... It's really funny. So, when I rate stuff on Goodreads now, I try and use the same criteria for rating them. So I rate out of 5 on each of these and then do an average. So I rate on story, which for non-fiction is like depth of topic and execution. Memorability, which is what I marked it down on. Enjoyment, which I gave 4 out of 5. Writing, I gave 5 out of 5. And depth of topic, I gave 4 out of 5. But memorability, I gave 3 out of 5. So overall, it was 4 out of 5. But yeah, and I was right, because now actually when all the sort of murder cases kind of blend into one, and I know that's partly because he had the same methods each time.
Yeah. I remember though, when I read it, I did think that one of the things she did very well, and I mean, maybe they don't linger with you, but she did really tell the victim's stories, because I think there's, you know, like there's this, the new Ted Bundy thing on Netflix.
Yes, which I've also watched.
I've not seen it yet, but I've seen a lot of criticism of the fact that it's really glorifying him. And this is like a guy who committed horrendous crimes against women. And I think one of the things I did like about I'll Be Gone in the Dark is that she did really tell the women's stories, and there's pictures of them, and it is as much about like her story in trying to work out who this guy is, but also there's a lot about who these women were.
Yeah.
And it's not all about like this one man, because obviously the story is about so much more than just him. And yes, I remember quite liking that.
But yeah, no, that's true. And I think I understand. So I've watched the Ted Bundy Netflix series, and I don't think it glorifies him. I just don't even think that's possible. He actually just seems completely disillusioned.
Oh, he's a psychopath.
Just the most psychopathic person ever. But I kind of get it is focused on him, and it's like his confessional tapes, basically. And they're about to make a Brynner film out where I think Zac Efron plays Ted Bundy.
Maybe it's just like the combination of the two.
Yeah, so I think definitely the film they're a bit more critical of. I think one, because obviously it's Zac Efron and he's very handsome, and I think the whole film is about how charming the guy is. But I mean, he was. And
exactly, that was a whole big problem. Thing of it.
But I do think you're right. I think if they'd... And in the Netflix series, they do focus a little bit on the kind of female victims, but they could have done more of that, which could have made it longer, because it's only 4 episodes long. And I think it might have been nice to kind of focus on them a little bit, but I guess it's whether they'd even get permission from the families at that point. I don't know.
Yeah. Because I think that's one of the things that I find most interesting, because the thing that got me into true crime, I've probably talked about this before, is the JonBenet Ramsey case. Like, I remember watching a programme about her when I was on holiday in Florida when I'd have been, I think, 8. And basically, it gave my younger brother nightmares for, like, literally months afterwards. But I remember that. And the thing is like, I can remember so much about her, and like I've seen some stuff about her, about the whole case since, but it's her that I remember, and it's not just about like her parents or anything, or like her death. It's about like this little girl. So I don't know, and that's quite, I think it's good when they kind of tell the story of the victim as well as like the murderer, I guess.
Yeah, it's I definitely recommend it. I think it might be one of those that it might scare some people slightly, just because of his methods of, because of what he used to do, and kind of breaking into people's houses when they're sleeping and that kind of thing. So perhaps if you get a little bit unnerved, it's not the best one to is any true crime yeah. a good one I mean, to read if you don't if you scare easily thing. I don't know,
this is the thing with I'll Be Gone in the Dark. I read it on holiday, and you know, I was in a room with a balcony, and I was just like, I can imagine somebody getting onto a balcony. Like, if I was on the ground floor, I'd have been really freaked out. Like, the idea of somebody, like, sliding open a patio door yeah. and, like, sneaking in. You can totally see somebody doing that. And, you know, like, I was fine because I was on, like, the third or fourth floor or something. But, oh my God. Yeah, if you scare easy, I'll Be Gone in the Dark might not be one for you.
No, I'd avoid.
But yeah, oh good, I'm glad you enjoyed it though.
Yes.
I'm really glad you enjoyed it. So staying on the kind of non-fiction theme, one that I read, and again it was just before Christmas, and it's one that everyone was talking about last year, and I'm slightly surprised that neither of us have talked about it at all before, is Tara Westover's Educated.
Yes, I've seen this a lot.
Yeah, so I read this just before Christmas. It's really good. I would definitely recommend it. I think it's a brilliant read. The thing... So, if you don't know, I mean, everybody... I feel like everybody's kind of heard a lot about it recently, but basically it's the story of a young woman called Tara Westover, surprisingly. She was brought up in a kind of... in a very strongly Mormon family, but she does start the book by saying, you know, there's good people in this book and there's less good people in this book, and there are Mormon people in this book, and it doesn't, she's basically saying she doesn't want people to come away from this thinking that all Mormons are awful, so I'm not saying that. Basically, she's brought up in a very strongly Mormon household where her dad was basically preparing for, like, the end of days, like, the rapture. So, like, the Christian apocalypse, the Christian version of the apocalypse, basically, where, you know, people are taken to heaven if they've been righteous, and the rest of the world burns in hell and all this kind of stuff. So her father was preparing for this since she was, you know, a tiny child, basically. Sorry, excuse me. And she wasn't allowed to go to school. So she was ostensibly homeschooled until she was quite old, but she wasn't really homeschooled. She was evidently taught to read and to write, but she wasn't really taught much more than that. And she and her brothers, and I think she had a sister as well, were like helping out on her father's scrapyard and all of this kind of stuff. And they didn't believe in modern medicine, so they weren't really taken to a hospital if they got hurt or sick or anything like that. You know, they spent all their time like canning fruit and like hiding stuff ready for the apocalypse and all this kind of stuff. And then she decides she wants to go to college. So she sort of like teaches herself to pass like the SATs, and she gets into Brigham Young, which is a Mormon college in the US. It's quite a well-known one, and she goes there and she does quite well there. She really struggled at first, and like one of the things that's been like one of the stories that's kind of pulled out because it makes a good story is that she was in a history class, I think, and she asked what the Holocaust was because she'd never heard of it, because she'd never been taught what it was. So, you know, she really, her general knowledge and just everything was just, she just had no idea about the world, basically. And yeah, and basically she got from there, she did a master's program, she went to Cambridge, and now she's got her PhD, and she's only like our sort of age. She's like, I think she's like early to mid 30s, something like that. And I think that's the thing that struck me most about it, is like how recent all of this stuff is. Like, she's changed quite a few names in the book, but if you Google certain things, like for instance, her mum now runs like an essential oils company. So if you Google Westover essential oils and then like the part of Utah, I think, where she grew up, you find her family home on Google Maps. It's there. Like, you can look at it on Google Maps. Like, you could drive past it if you wanted to. Like, it's all there. There's like pictures of her family on the internet. Like, they have Facebook accounts. Like, this is recent stuff, and it's just, that just kind of blew my mind. But I mean, it's incredibly well written. It's like, it's a really, really great memoir, and it really put back into perspective, you know, how privileged I was to grow up in a very supportive family where, you know, obviously I was never told I couldn't do anything. You know, I was always going to go to school, I was always probably going to go to university, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, it does kind of tell you about the importance of the idea of the whole point of it's, you know, the importance of education over everything else. But it's really, really good. It's definitely, you know, when I first read it, I did think it was a shame that we'd just done our top 5 books of the year, because I was thinking it would probably make it onto that list. I'm not sure now whether it would be put top 5, but it's definitely top 10 that I read last year. It's really, really well written. And it's a great story. I read it in like 2 days.
Yeah, I've seen lots of kind of really high reviews for it. I think on Audible, it's on my like wish list on Audible, and it's got really high ratings on there. So yeah, it's definitely one that I've wanted to give a try.
Yeah, like one of the quotes on the front is from Barack Obama. Like, it's like that level good. So yeah, he's got pretty good taste.
So. Yeah, I'll have to give it a go. It reminds me of, have you seen the film Captain Fantastic?
No.
It's got Viggo Mortensen in it.
Yeah, I know the one you mean, but no, I never saw it.
It's so good. It's really good. It's one of those films that me and Ben just, I wanted to go to the cinema for my birthday, and we went to the like cute little art house cinema in Norwich, and it was on, and we just thought, oh, we'll just go see it, and it was so good. It's obviously not the same thing, but it's about this man who's essentially bringing his kids up in the wilderness. Like, they live completely in the wild, and it's kind of a coming of age film, particularly for the teenage boy that's reaching kind of university age, because they haven't been to school, they are homeschooled, but he secretly on the side has been doing his sort of doing the work to whatever tests you have to do to get into uni, and they don't do A levels, do they? But that SATs. Sort of thing, yes. So he's been preparing for those, like, secretly, because he wants to go to university. So it's a really good coming of age and moral dilemma of, is keeping kids away from mainstream education and just away from civilization in general in the term of the film. But it's really, really good. I think you'd really enjoy it.
Yeah, it does sound very much like that kind of thing, to be honest. It is super similar. Like, there's a lot about kind of, I guess, you know, I think you and I have, I don't think we've talked about it on here, but you and I have both said that, like, we don't think that we personally could homeschool. But I've got nothing against the idea of homeschooling. I think, you know, for some people it's brilliant. But yeah, there's a lot about this kind of, is it right to keep kids completely cloistered from the real world in this book? And I'm not saying that homeschoolers do that, just making that very clear.
No, I think this is the extreme version.
Exactly.
Of that,
it's
it?
That extreme, like, believing the world is out to get you kind of thing that is so true in this book. And, you know, there's some situations where, like, her brother has, like, this horrendous accident, like, falls from, like, an incredible height onto concrete and hits his head, and then shortly afterwards hits his head again in some situation, and, like, the personality change, and, like, you know, she was, like, very physically abused by her family, like, you know, particularly this brother, like, beat her mercilessly and all this kind of stuff. And then there's another scenario where another one of her brothers, like, catches on fire, and, like, the way that he's treated and not taken to hospital and, like, all this kind of stuff. It just beggars belief that in the 21st century people live like that, but they do. And I just, yeah. And I think the other thing that she really highlights in it is that she's got, like, I think she's got, like, 5 or 6 siblings, and lots of them are bringing their children up in the same way that they were brought up. And that's the thing that kind of really blew my mind, just that this kind of self perpetuates, I guess, and just kind of, it continues. So even, like, one of her brothers got a PhD and, you know, went out into the world, and he decided to homeschool his kids kind of as a result of the way he was brought up. And I just think, wow, like, can you ever really get away from something like that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it sounds really good. I definitely want to read it.
I think you'd like it. I really think you'd like it. I mean, I think, so let's go with your categories of rating. So what were they?
Depth so of story, which is depth of topic and execution.
I think I'd give it a 5 for that, actually.
Sorry, coughing. Memorability.
I'd say a 4.5. Can I give half marks?
Yeah, you can work out the average.
Okay. Yeah.
Enjoyment.
4.5, because it's difficult. It's a good read, but it's a difficult read at times. I wouldn't say I always fully enjoyed reading it.
And writing.
4.5. So I'm giving it a 4.5.
Yeah,
on average.
It probably averages it 4.5.
About 4.5 out of 5. So it's up there. It's really high. Like, it is. It's very, very good. I can see. As I said, I can see why it's got a lot. Very.
See
good.
If you were. Did you give a 5 for something?
Yeah.
See, on Goodreads, if that was me, it probably would have bumped it up to, like, a 5-star, because you can't give half stars on Goodreads. So I'd have rounded up.
Yeah. So on Goodreads, it would be a 5 probably, but you know.
But then I have my breakdown underneath, so people can see how I got to that score. So
I think that's very smart. Maybe this would make me more inclined to do Goodreads. This was kind of one of my missions for this year, but because I've not really read very much, then it's, you know. So that's one of my recent reads.
It sounds good. Yeah. I definitely want to give that one a go.
Yes. Should we do our other recent reads a bit more quickly? Because we're already at half an hour.
Yeah, so my second book was another true crime book, and it's because I recommended a lot of TV. I did say this is what I've been doing. So, on ITV, probably it was in the new year, there was a TV series called Manhunt on with Martin Clunes.
Yes, I did see this. I didn't watch it, but I've heard of it.
If you can catch it on, if it's still on the ITV Play or whatever it's called, it's really, really, really good. But what I did do was read the book it's based on. So it's pretty, well, basically it's about Levi Belfield, who was a serial killer in this country, who famously, I don't really like saying it like that, but famously murdered Millie Dowler.
Infamously.
Is that infamously. The word?
It's like negatively. Notoriously? Yeah. Notoriously or infamously, I would be.
Yeah, famously sounds positive. Famous is a bit of a positive word, isn't it? So that's what he didn't just murder her. Actually, he was convicted of that while he was in prison for murdering two other women. And they think he's done kind of countless other murders as well. It's basically Colin Sutton, the, I don't even know what his job title is, Chief something, I'd have thought.
And Chief Superintendent of something, yeah, or other, probably.
Something important like that. And his story, basically, of how they convicted him, and it's fascinating. But the TV series was brilliant. The book I thought was even better, mainly because it goes into a lot more detail. So the TV series kind of follows, I can't remember her name, there's a French girl that was murdered, and that's the murder that kind of, once they got into like the nitty-gritty of who did that and how it happened, how the rest of it unraveled. So it follows them investigating that murder, then the other ones that came about because of that, and him being convicted, him being read his charges at the end, and that's where it finishes in the TV series, and you get like a little summary at the end saying he was convicted of X, Y, and Z. And it's really, really, really good. I think if you've got any interest in police procedures and how they even go about catching somebody like that, it's brilliant. It's probably the best crime fiction, true crime that I've read.
Really? That's very high praise.
Yeah, just because it's so fascinating, just how fastidious, is that the word, they are, and how I always think I'd be really good at the sort of, I like facts and I like organising, and I think I'd be really good at that side of it. I think what I'd struggle with is the courage of your conviction to go, no, we're going down the right path here, and this is the route we're going to take. Can you hear Ben talking?
I can hear Pip growling.
No, it's Ben.
Oh. Are you sure that's not Pip snoring?
It's Pip snoring. I was ready to shout to Ben, and I can now hear her snoring from right behind me.
That's so cute. Oh,
sorry, everyone. It's really, really, really good and really worth a read. He's a very good writer. It's not boring at all. You think it would be because it is about police procedural and facts, but he's got a really good manner and a really good writing style, and it's brilliant. And the TV series is really good. If it's still on ITV Player, it's so worth watching.
I'm totally, totally going to look it up. It actually sounds amazing.
And the guy that plays Levi Belfield in the TV series is terrifying, even though he only needs to be in it. Like, he's hardly in it at all.
Oh, God.
because they describe how his personality switches and this bloke that plays him is just incredible. And so it's really worth watching by the end, because it finishes with him reading the charges to him. You're kind of cheering away, even though you know, like, you know what happened to him. But it's brilliant.
Oh my God.
And the book is great as well.
That does genuinely sound brilliant. Like, I haven't read a true crime in a little while, so maybe I'm going to have a look at it, because it might get me out of my reading slump.
Yeah, it's Manhunt, so. And he's called Colin Sutton, I think.
Okay, my other recent read is A Spool of Blue Thread by Anne Tyler.
Yes, I have that book somewhere.
I think you've got it. I think I've seen it on your shelf possibly once before. Do you know, I picked it up in a charity bookshop at some point, I think, just because I needed some more things to read. It's really good, actually. It's interesting. It tells the story of, like, one family. You'd like it because it's all set around a house, which I know you like. And it's, like, the story of this family and, like, everything that happens to them. It's the parents are kind of the main focus, I guess. But it's also about the husband's parents and their children. So the main couple are Red and Abby, so they're kind of the focus, and it's Red's parents and their son Denny in particular, who are kind of the main stories. And it covers, like, basically, God, the entire book must cover about 50 or 60 years. It's mad. It's huge. Maybe even longer than that, actually, probably more like 80 years. But it's quite short for that. So I think my main criticism of it would be it really skims over stuff. It gives you quite a light view into everything that's going on in all of these people's lives. And I was kind of like, when I started reading it, I was kind of like, oh, this is all the backstory, and we'll slow down soon and you'll get into the actual meat of the story. But it never really did that. So I did kind of feel like it was just kind of skimming over stuff. Which was a bit of a shame, because I actually really liked her writing style. I thought it was quite good. And this is another one that's Booker nominated, so, you know, it sticks with my theme. On which, did you hear that the Man Group have stopped their sponsorship of the Booker Prize?
Yes, I did see this in the news.
Yes, and Sebastian Faulks is very pleased.
They mentioned Sebastian Faulks.
Yes, and how he criticises them. Anyway, that's a whole sidebar. So A Spool of Blue Thread, I would say I would probably give it a 3. I mean, out of 5. It's not particularly memorable. It's an enjoyable read. The writing is good, but I wouldn't say it's anything massively to write home about. It's a good read, but an easy read. So it's probably, you know, Eleanor Oliphant level difficulty. And, you know, it's good because it kind of goes into real depth about the different families and different times. And there's an interesting link right at the end. I don't want to spoil it, but, like, there's this whole thing that happens with Red's parents. And there's this massive age gap between his parents. And you find out, like, quite interesting stuff about kind of how they came to be together. And at the end, Denny goes back to a girlfriend, and you get a hint of, to me, it kind of, there was a bit of a hint of kind of, like, the family of, like, history repeating itself, although the age gap wasn't implied in the same way, but it's just the kind of these couples kind of forming in ways that perhaps you wouldn't traditionally expect. And I don't know, there was a weird correlation there that I wasn't sure if it was deliberate or whether I was reading too much into it, but it was an enjoyable read. I read it quickly in, like, a week or so earlier this year, and I enjoyed it while I did. So yeah, I maybe a 3, 3.5. So
yes, I'm pretty sure I own it, and I think it survived the cull because I got rid of loads of books when I moved as well.
It's worth it. It's worth picking up, particularly if you just want something, like, yeah, quite easy to read. So my current reading, which isn't really reading, is because it's a recipe book, and I've talked about a recipe book on here before. So I decided I'm allowed to again. So this one is Midnight Chicken and Other Recipes Worth Living For by Ella Risbridger. And I have followed Ella Risbridger on Twitter for a number of years now, and I used to love her writing on the pool, and she's written for like The Independent and stuff as well. Her writing is just generally brilliant. She's a very unique writing style, or recipe style in general. And basically this is a recipe book, and it's a story of how she learned to cook, essentially, and how cooking kind of saved her life. Like, she was in a very dark place with her mental health, and her boyfriend, who very sadly has passed away now, he got a very rare form of cancer and died last year, last spring, I think, after a number of years really, really suffering with it. And she's only, I think, 26, so, and he was only 27, 28, I think. So really, you know, his name is John Underwood, also a brilliant writer. And he taught her to cook. And it's a story of him teaching her to cook and how food shaped her life and the memories she has around food and everything like that. And it's sort of interspersed with personal pieces of writing and the story behind basically every recipe. And it's just lovely to read. Like, the other morning I was just lying in bed reading it with a cup of tea as if it was a novel, which I don't do with many recipe books. I love recipe books. I have mountains of them. But this is a firm favourite, and I really recommend it. I would not recommend it if you're not a confident cook, because she doesn't really do measurements very well for a lot of things. So it's kind of, you know, feel this, feel that. Like, it should, you know, the mixture should look like this or should smell like that. And if you're really not a confident cook, you'd struggle with that, I think. And if you're a very precise cook, you'd really struggle with it. If you're somewhere in the middle, I think you'd really like it. And she kind of says, like, she's got like three mantras, which are salt your pasta water, when in doubt, add butter, and everything will probably turn out okay in the end. And I love that. And it's true, you know, it's kind of obviously true of in life and in cooking. So yeah, I'd recommend it. It's a lovely book. Definitely a recipe book for the reader in your life. So yeah.
Yeah, it sounds good. And actually, that reminds me that I did also read Nigel Slater's Christmas. Is it Christmas Chronicles?
Yes.
Before Christmas. So I did read another book, which I loved. I listened to that on audio. That was fantastic.
It's just brilliant. They did a podcast of it as well. So some...
Yeah, I didn't manage to listen to that though, but yeah.
The podcast is predominantly excerpts from the audiobook, apparently.
Okay. That makes sense.
A couple of extra bits, but it's predominantly audiobook. So you didn't miss anything
I listened to that before Christmas, and it made me feel really, really, really Christmassy.
So I listened to it on our way back from Paris. It was.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, that's what I was listening to on the Eurostar. It was so soothing. I love his voice.
Yes. So we're gonna quickly talk about some of the books that we're looking forward to reading this year. I was gonna say next year. This year.
This year in 2019.
Yes.
So, do you want to go first?
Yeah, so I have written some stuff down. I haven't written loads down, just a few, because I think I've learned over the years that I don't particularly like to restrict myself. And actually, when I make lists, I never ever stick to them. So, I've just got four that I've written down. And one of them isn't a book, so I'll go with that one first. I've written more poetry. So
written more poetry.
I would quite like to read more poetry collections. I feel like that's one I've thought about doing every year, and then I never really get round to doing it. So I definitely would like to read more poetry this year.
So I have two recommendations for you there. Mm-hmm. Based on fun things. The first is Wendy Cope, who is a brilliant poet, and she was on Desert Island Discs a couple of weeks ago, and it's a lovely listen, so I would totally recommend that, and her poetry is brilliant. One of her, can I read it? I've got it saved on my phone. She's got it's a very, very short poem that I have saved. So she's got a poem called Differences of Opinion, and it goes, "He tells her that the earth is flat. He knows the facts, and that is that. In altercations fierce and long, she tries her best to prove him wrong. But he has learned to argue well. He calls her arguments unsound and often asks her not to yell. She cannot win. He stands his ground. The planet goes on being round. And I love it so much. And I've been in so many arguments with people where I just kind of have had to remind myself of that afterwards. And she's a very funny poet. And she does amazing parodies of other poets. And she does amazing sort of takes on the world. And I love them. So I would totally recommend Wendy Cope.
Yeah, I'll have to give her a go.
And the other one, he's got a book out and I can't think what it's called. But his name is Brian Bilston, and he is by far the best Instagram poet out there. I don't like Instagram poets very much. I'm not a fan of Rupi Kaur.
No, I'm not. I've read Milk and Honey and didn't enjoy it that much.
And Brian Bilston, he puts little poems on Instagram, and they are so clever. There's one about Brexit that I recommend everybody looks up. And he kind of likens it to jumping off a cliff and jumping off in embarrassment and all this kind of stuff. And it's brilliant. So I'd recommend him for you. Again, funny and good observations on the world.
So. I shall check him out as well.
So yes.
Cool.
So yeah, so more poetry was your first.
More poetry. Shall I do another one?
Yes.
I've got one here. So this book, I'm just showing it to Alice.
Oh, it's so pretty.
So this book is called Live Green, 52 Steps for a More Sustainable Life by a lady called Jen Chillingsworth. Now, she's on Instagram. Annoyingly, I can't remember her handle. Hold on. She has a lovely Instagram account, which is where I found her first. And then obviously she said she was bringing this book out. Jen Little Birdie.
Oh, I follow her.
Yes. So I followed her for years. And she's just brought this beautiful book out, which is it's 52 Steps for a More Sustainable Life. But yeah, it's just lots of tips really on how to kind of be more sustainable in your home, which, I am trying to do and I have been trying to do for a long time. I'm not perfect, certainly, and I don't strive to be perfect. I'm not sure I could cope with being a perfect kind of eco warrior, but I do.
I don't think very many people can be perfect eco warriors.
I think it's a very restrictive lifestyle, and I don't think I could cope with it.
No,
but I do try my best. And I've loved her Instagram account for years. So when she brought this out, one, I was just wanting to support her, but two, it's just a very sweet little book. With lots of lovely illustrations. I don't know if they're her illustrations. Maybe not. So yeah, that is... Amelia Flower is the illustrator.
That's a lovely name.
It is. I wonder if it's a real name. So that's one I bought probably just before Christmas, or pre-ordered it, and it's arrived recently. So yeah, that's one.
So one that I have... that I'm excited to read this year, because we'll come onto my longer list, which is predominantly a list of books that are currently in hardback that I can't read because I hate hardbacks. But the one that I've got here that I'm super excited to read soon is Wedding Toasts I'll Never Give by Ada Kaloon. And basically, she wrote a piece for the New York Times Modern Love column. Don't know if you read that at all. They write a... basically different writers write a short piece on love in any of its forms for the New York Times every Sunday. And it's one of my favourite things on the internet. It's just brilliant. And she wrote one called The Wedding Toast I'll Never Give. And it's basically all about how you won't always, she's on her way to a wedding and she's thinking about what she wants to say to the bride and groom and all this kind of stuff. And her husband misses his flight, basically, and she basically, it's all of this stuff about how you won't always love your partner, you will quite often hate them, there will be times that everything is terrible and you want to murder them for missing their flight or for not doing the dishes or whatever it is that they do that just drives you at the wall, but then actually you realise that that's what makes a marriage, is kind of all of this stuff about life isn't perfect. It's that, you know, it's that Bob Marley quote, you know, he's not perfect and you're not either, kind of thing. And it's just the loveliest piece. I'll see if I can send you a link to it and we can put it in the show notes maybe. But she's written a book basically as a result of that. And it's a short little tome, and it's just more sort of ruminations on love and relationships and all this kind of stuff. Now, I have never been in a particularly long time relationship. I think my longest relationship is about 12 months, and they were not a happy 12 months either at that. So, you know, but I feel like it's important to get perspectives on relationships so I don't overly romanticize them, actually. And yeah, I'm just super excited to read it. So maybe that will be the one that gets me out of my reading slump. So yeah.
Yeah, that sounds really good as well.
It's lovely. Like, honestly, if you're interested, and her writing in that article is just lovely. It's like, it's so cool. So would totally recommend. It's funny and it's light and it's honest. And I love that in nonfiction. So
One of the other books I've got on my list is Melmoth. I don't know how yes, to pronounce it, by Sarah
that's on
Perry.
Mine as well.
Don't know when that's coming out in paperback.
Soon, yes. I think.
I don't really know an awful lot about it, and I'm trying not to read too much about it, so I'm not going to kind of sit here and describe the storyline. I kind of want to keep it secret for myself. So, but I did go, this was a couple of years ago now, I went to a talk by Sarah Perry and Sarah Waters about gothic fiction, and she talked about Melmoth the Wanderer, which is, I'm assuming it must be what this book is kind of based on or inspired by, so mm-hmm. I'm definitely interested in reading it. I don't mind hardbacks, so I might read it when it's in hardback.
That's actually reminded me that one of the books I've got, I think behind me, about there, I'm just showing Jenny there, is After Me Comes the Flood by Sarah
yes,
Perry.
Yes, that's the first. Have you read one, that? Isn't it? No, it's got very mixed reviews on. Yeah. I think we've talked about this before. But then I think we've also talked about the fact that I reckon Sarah Perry is probably a slightly Marmite writer, yeah, in that either you're going to get on with her kind of, I mean, I wouldn't say she's overly descriptive, but
she's not plot forward, is she?
No, definitely not plot driven. So, yeah, people might find her a little bit wandering, yeah, in her narrative. So I don't mind that.
So I'm hoping to try to read that. Other books on my list, and one that's coming out in paperback on the 2nd of May, which is really far away and annoying, is Crudo by Olivia Lang.
Oh no, I have heard of this. So you've got like a lobster on the front cover.
It does, it's got the most amazing cover. And basically it's set in 2017 and in a Brexit sort of paralysed UK and Trump tweeting the world into nuclear war. I'm reading some of this off Amazon just so you know. And it's kind of about the world changing as this woman enters her 40s. And I think it's meant to be brilliant. So I'm really, really looking forward to reading that. Although it's only got 3 stars on Amazon, which I think is quite interesting. So I wonder kind of, some people are saying it's very sort of narcissistic and overhyped. Worst
Sarah Perry
book ever.
Doesn't score well on Amazon if you read Amazon reviews.
So whereas other people are saying, you know, it's absolutely amazing, very clever. So I'm very intrigued to read that. The other one that seeing the paperback cover, which has got a woman in water, has just reminded me of, is The Water Cure by Sophie McIntosh.
This is on my TBR on Goodreads.
So yeah, I'm literally just writing a list on my phone as we speak. I really need Goodreads. So I really want to read that as well, which is meant to just be very, very clever. One book that I forgot to mention earlier that I tried to read and couldn't get into but might give another go, or might give a go on audio, is Milkman by Anna, oh, what's her name? By Anna Burns.
I've heard of this one, I think.
Which was the Booker Prize winner.
Yes, I have heard of it.
And, wow, it's hard going. It's written like a stream of consciousness, so which is why I want to listen to it, I think.
Yeah, sometimes I think they work really well on audio.
I think it would work really well on audio, but, God, you need a lot of concentration to get through it, and I just don't have that concentration. So, not sure how I'd recommend the book, but yes, I'm interested to try and give that another go. Yeah.
And the last one I've got on my list is Shirley Jackson, A Rather Haunted Life by Ruth Franklin, which I think is about a very good biography about Shirley Jackson. I'm just having a look now. Shirley Jackson reveals the tumultuous life and inner darkness of the... This blurb is not right. Because she didn't write this herself. Reveals the tumultuous life and inner darkness of the literary genius behind such classics as The Lottery and The Haunting of Hill House. So our friend who is a prolific reader and writer, yes, recommended that one. I do like all Shirley Jackson's books. So,
and so yeah, it's totally worth it then.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to... It's quite long. It's like 600 and something pages.
Wow, that is long.
But then I haven't picked up a big book in a long time, so maybe that would be a good one to take my time over.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Other ones on my list, just to finish off, are, of course, Normal People by Sally Rooney. Circe by Madeline Miller. I'm really keen to read. I love kind of Greek mythology and ancient Greece and ancient Roman stuff in general.
Yes, this is on my Audible.
Yeah, so
list.
I did a bit of ancient Greek history and mythology in uni and find the whole thing fascinating. And Circe is in the Odyssey, which I studied in some depth, so really interested to hear, to sort of read this retelling of it. Not interested enough to obviously get over my hardbacker version, but the other book that I hope will get me over my hardbacker version, because I've got it sitting on the foot of my bed right now, it was a birthday present and I'm desperate to read it, is Becoming by Michelle Obama.
Yes,
it was a very apt birthday present because she and I share the same birthday, which, but separated by several years. Sorry, Michelle. But it was a birthday present from my friend Emily and her husband, and I am very, very excited to read it. But I haven't picked... I can't take hardbacks on the tube with me. I mean, they just weigh too much, which is why I've not read it yet. But it's top of the list. It's next on my to-be-read list, I've decided, right this second.
Yes, I will probably listen to it on audio if I'm going to read that one.
Because she reads the audiobook herself.
She does, yeah.
So, totally worth it. But yeah, so I've actually got loads on my list. And also the thing that I'm really excited about, by just flicking through that list really quickly, all women. One of my missions for 2018, when it came to reading, was to read less by white men.
Yeah, and mine were all women as well. I do read quite a... I think I'm quite heavy on the female writer, but not through any kind of conscious decision. I think just generally that's just what happens.
Yeah, and I think it was kind of more that I kind of wanted to make a conscious decision to read more by women, and particularly by people of colour as well, because, you know, obviously if you're just reading from the same perspective every time, that becomes quite dull. So, yeah, so that's kind of one of my missions. So I don't think that list is good for the women front. I'm not sure how good it is for the people of colour front, but that's kind of given me another little kick for things that I need to do this year, because it just, as I say, it just makes life more interesting, doesn't it? Reading the same book over and over again, not so much fun.
Yeah, so we're planning on reading something together.
Yes.
Probably not next month, I wouldn't have thought, but perhaps the month after. So for our April episode?
Let's say April. Let's aim for April, even though I'm away for a week in April, but let's aim for April.
Yes, if we aim for our April episode being kind of our joint read, not that we've chosen what it is we're going to read. I think we're hoping that people might suggest something.
Please suggest something for us. Maybe something that's not on any of the ones that we've just said.
Yeah.
So something else that you've read recently and liked or would like our perspectives on, or preferably something you think we'd like, because last time we did this, it was See What I Have Done, which I can't even remember who wrote it, unfortunately, which was the Lizzie Borden book, and neither of us liked it.
Yeah, so neither of us particularly enjoyed it, did we? So I think that was one that we just both happened to own, but I'm quite open to suggesting something and us going out and getting hold of it.
Yes, precisely. So please suggest good things that you've liked. I'm also trying to be less snobby about chick lit this year. So
am I. That was one of my resolutions, actually, was that, not because I don't really make resolutions, that's one of the things that went through my head, was actually, I think it's because I've been in this reading slump that I'm thinking, do you know what, I probably do just need something light
and fun.
And fun, yeah. And so, I think I need to pick up some chick lit is what I need.
To give another podcast a shout out, if you've not heard it, Sentimental Garbage is a podcast which is all about chick lit and the good and great and not so good bits about chick lit. So, and Caroline O'Donoghue, who's the presenter, gets other writers and interesting people to talk about their favourite pieces of chick lit for the podcast, and I've heard about some great ones on there. So I would recommend that for getting your chick lit recommendations. So.
Yes, I'll have to have a listen. I think Heartburn's the closest I've got to reading any kind of anything that might be described as chick lit in recent years.
Oh, I think I've read things that are closer than that. Lucy Vine's books, she would freely admit that they're chick lit. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I read Crazy Rich Asians last year, so that's definitely chick lit.
Definitely is, yeah.
But was great fun, so that's what's made me think I need to be less snobby about
it. I read Bridget Jones's Diary.
Yeah, that's definitely chick lit.
I was reading that in Paris, so yeah, that definitely is. And I loved it, so yeah, I think I do need to pick up some more. Less serious,
more fun. Life's too short to only read serious books.
Exactly. So yeah, please recommend a book that we can read together, one that's not too long, perhaps one that's quite easily accessible,
please. So no hardbacks.
Because it'd be really good if actually some listeners wanted to join in, or
yes,
at least
please
read
join
the book.
Us
so perhaps in the next episode, so March's episode, we can let you know what the book is.
Yes.
Ready for April.
Yes. That sounds like an excellent plan that we will stick to. Definitely, yes. We will stick to it.
We will. Now that we're back, we're going to do this monthly.
We're back with a bang. We're going to do this monthly.
I feel like this is going to give me the boost I need to get reading again, actually.
Same. This has actually made me really excited about reading this year, which yes, I've not been
too
feeling too excited about.
It.
So 100% all on board with it.
Cool.
Yay.
Right. We
on
haven't
that
gone
note,
over too much.
No, and that's on a nice high end point.
Yes.
So, as always, if you've got any comments or feedback or questions or disagreements or thoughts or opinions, I've lost track of the words, then please let us know. Please always feel free to tweet us or get in touch in any other way. So.
Yes.
We like hearing what you have to say.
We do.
Okay.
All right then. Thanks, everyone.
Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
You can now support the Bookcast Club on Patreon. Visit Jenny's Patreon page at www.patreon.com/notes-to-the-moon to learn more about our Patreon tiers and how you can support the podcast. Thanks for listening.